Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace, and they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. If I can use Angie and enjoy it, so can you. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2024. Our dear friend Ray McGovern joins us now. Ray, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. The New York Times is reporting this morning that the International Criminal Court is preparing an indictment of, among others, Benjamin Netanyahu. I assume it would be his senior defense people and perhaps even some leaders of Hamas as well. But this would be earth-shattering, at least in the Western news, if it were to happen. What would this mean? Would he be subject to arrest?
Technically speaking, it would. But you have to look at the provenance of these reports. They come out of the bureau chief for the New York Times, if memory serves, in Jerusalem. It's five Israeli sources warning about that this would be a bad thing. And then, of course, the coup de grace, the U.S. is working against this, too. So don't think anything is going to happen in the World Criminal Court. We can put the kibosh on it. A little footnote here, Judge. You probably remember that George W. Bush, the younger, he said about the World Criminal Court, look, if anyone so much as dare bring an American serviceman before the World Criminal Court, I authorize an armed plucking of that person out of harm's way. Now, that's how much respect the U.S. and Israel, who are actually not party to the World Criminal
Court. Well, that was my next question. Does the International Criminal Court, pursuant to the Treaty of Rome, not signed by Russia, China, Iran, the U.S., or North Korea, interesting combination, does it indict people, nationals of countries that are not signatories?
Yes, it can. We've had several, usually African dictators who have been brought before the court, if memory serves. So my belief is, sure, they can do that. The fact that you're not a signatory shouldn't matter in that case.
Yeah, the EU has actually indicted George W. Bush, a Spanish magistrate. I don't know if that indictment is still out there. I believe Dick Cheney as well. I know neither has traveled to Europe since leaving office, so those indictments might still be valid.
Well, I do know that George W. Bush was prepared to give a big speech in Geneva. It's about 15 years ago now. And word got around, and people were ready to serve him with papers as soon as he touched Swiss ground. And he learned about that, unfortunately, a day before and canceled his trip. Lots of money he was going to get for that trip. The embarrassment of the U.S. president, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Rumsfeld, who had to do the same thing in Paris 2 years previous, you know, it's really embarrassing. But there it is. There are legal restrictions on making a war of aggression, as that was the case in Iraq.
And of course, certain war crimes have no statutes of limitations, like an illegal war or torture. Rumsfeld has passed away, but Bush and Cheney are still very much alive and theoretically could be prosecuted. This would mean that theoretically Netanyahu and Gallant, the defense minister, could be prosecuted for as long as they're alive. If they're arrested, now I don't know if they conduct prosecutions in absentia when they can't arrest people. I believe that Putin has been indicted by one of these courts for something in Ukraine. I'm not sure.
It's the same sort of thing. Yeah, Putin was indicted the same by the World Criminal Court, but this time the U.S. was behind it. You have to realize that the guy running the court is very much in the pocket of the West. That's well known. It's been embarrassing to the whole world to see how much he inclines toward the West. So in my view, over the short term or even medium term, it's not anything that the Israelis have to worry about, but they want to put out a little preemptive message. Look, not only are we not going to comply with this, but our patron, the United States, is also a sotto voce, because Biden is just as guilty as anyone else for enabling the genocide. They're with us. Nothing's going to happen, at least for several years. The wheels of justice grind exceedingly slow, and especially in cases like this.
Right. What did Anthony Blinken do or say over the weekend that caused you to refer to his diplomacy with the word, in quotes, as juvenile?
Well, I quoted an old pamphlet that none other than Lenin wrote. He talked about being way out on the ideological spectrum, okay? Left-wing communism. So this is not only communism, this is extreme left-wing Trotskyism and that kind of thing. He said it was a infantile disorder, quotes. Now, if you look at what Blinken did in China just over the last week, that betrays this infantile disorder that U.S. exceptionalism, U.S. power to shape the world, still exists. He could not have performed worse to alienate his Chinese interlocutors, including Xi Jinping, the president who met with him and gave him a little lecture about, hey, when you say something, you ought to follow through on it. Right after that, while he was still in Beijing, he gave this incredible press conference and saying, look, I told those Chinese, they better not fortify the Russian economy anymore, because Russia is help getting that kind of help so that they might succeed in Ukraine. We told them to stop that. And besides, they ought to stop surplus production. They shouldn't overproduce things, because that's helping our that's hurting our economy. I mean, hello, the guy is a juvenile or a disorder that comes of thinking you're exceptional, or as Madeleine Albright put it, even more exceptional. What was the word will come to me.
Here's Secretary Blinken, cut number three, Chris, criticizing China empowering Russia's, just what you're talking about, Russia's brutal war in Ukraine.
In my discussions today, I reiterated our serious concern about the PRC providing components that are powering Russia's brutal war of aggression against Ukraine. Russia would struggle to sustain its assault on Ukraine without China's support.
Is that true?
No.
That Russia would struggle to sustain its assault on Ukraine without China's support? Colonel McGregor reports this morning that the Ukrainian military lost 8,000 men and women last week dead, and that a Russian general has arrived on the scene with 100,000 fresh and trained Russian soldiers.
Let's face it, as you get older, after a night with drinks, you don't bounce back the next day like you used to. Thanks to ZBiotics, you don't have to make the choice of having a great night or a great next day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It is this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break down this byproduct. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. So go to ZBiotics.com/judge to get 15% off your first order when you use Judge at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/judge and use the code JUDGE at checkout for your 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode of Judging Freedom.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
No, it's not true, Judge. It never was true. Now, I suppose that China could, if Blinken told them, stop importing so much oil from Russia and stop paying Russia so much. But, you know, that would not be in China's interest. I don't know why you think that China would do something like that. But up until now, China has developed normal trade relationships with Russia. They're not going to stop. And the Chinese have made that clear after Blinken said those warning words. With respect to what they're providing, you know, even a year ago, top intelligence officials were saying, yeah, it doesn't matter. We're watching that very closely, but China has not really provided much in the way of real help for Russia, and they don't need to. They get lots of help from North Korea, from Iran, and they can do a hell of a lot indigenously.
Here's Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi responding to the time he spent with Secretary Blinken. Cut number four, Chris.
The China-U.S. relationship is facing more negative factors and all kinds of disruptions. China's legitimate development rights have been unreasonably suppressed, and our core interests are facing challenges. Should China and the U.S. stay on the right path of moving forward with stability or return to a downward spiral? This is a major question facing our two countries and tests our sincerity and ability.
Doesn't sound like Blinken made much progress. That's the guy he was talking to for 2 days.
Yeah, this wasn't about progress, Judge. It was about showing that we could stay in Beijing for 3 days and talk to Chinese officials and warn them what we want them not to do. Even before the trip, it was made very clear by the State Department and others that we have very low expectations for this. And it looked like the Chinese were not very inscrutable. You saw Wang Yi there. They're pretty direct. And Xi Jinping, the president, came in and crashed that meeting and also read Blinken the Riot Act. Blinken was taking notes, okay? Now, Blinken didn't say a word publicly in that one, but then before he left Beijing, he decided to insult the Chinese up and down and tell them, look, you're overproducing. Look, you're enabling Russia to make progress. And, it just doesn't make any sense unless it's all for domestic consumption to show that we can deal with the Chinese and we can face them down and tell them what to do still because we are the exceptional country in the world.
Exceptional country. Do you think the State Department recognizes any limitations to its exceptionalism?
Well, not the people running the State Department. You know, it's sort of a contagious illness. When you're brought up and when you're nurtured in the various top schools to believe that you're indispensable, which is the other word I was seeking, the one from Madeleine Albright, and exceptional, then you kind of glom onto that and say, well, you know, that must be the case. And then you translate that into international relations and you find yourself 30, 40, 50 years behind the curve, because after World War II, after the implosion of Russia, the Soviet Union, we were exceptional. We were number one. It's the sooner these people realize that we're not number one anymore, Russia and China together are number one. We're a distant second to all that.
What kind of a bind do you think Netanyahu is in now with respect to Rafah? If he fails to invade Rafah and if he fails to attack Hezbollah, the right-wing fanatics in his government might leave the government, and then the unthinkable happens for Bibi. He has to call an election during wartime, and he's personally very unpopular. Members of his own party want to dump him.
Well, not only those, but Chuck Schumer wants to dump him too. I mean, Chuck told him 4 weeks ago, look, Bibi, you ought to have early elections. You guys ought to sort things out in a better way. I mean, it's really ridiculous, isn't it? Now, the thing to remember, of course, is that close to 70% of the Israeli people favor what's going on in Gaza now, the extermination of the Palestinians there. Now, ironically, a greater percentage don't like Netanyahu, but their focus is on cleaning out this menace, okay? Now, how are they going to clean it out? We know that right after October 7th, Tony Blinken went to Cairo and said, President Sisi, please, please let maybe a million and a half Gazans come into the Sinai. You got lots of room in the Sinai. We'll pay for the tents and everything else. Let them come in because we don't want them all to be killed, because that's the tenor in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Now, Sisi said, you're out of your mind. I'm not going to do that. So what's the choice here? Are you going to kill them all? 1.4 million people driven into Rafah? Or are you going to try to find some way to get rid of, is Sisi going to bend to U.S. pressure now? I don't know. But, you know, the choice that Bibi Netanyahu faces now is really very delicate. And I think, just as the past indicates, that despite what Biden says in wringing his hands, is, you know, I don't want everybody to be killed in Rafah, he'll do it anyway. He'll invade, or he'll try to make this out as a war against the remaining people, the leaders of Hamas, and he'll decimate that population. Mark my words, that's what he'll do. That's what he'll do. And guess what? The United States will continue to give him the wherewithal to get rid of the rest of them and make Gaza beachfront property for Israelis.
To be sold by Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law. No joke. We all watched the clip of him speaking to some professor at Harvard and suggesting that. The United States also doesn't seem to care if Bibi Netanyahu wants to interfere in American domestic politics. We watched that clip. I'm not going to play it again, but I will play for you in a minute. The State Department spokesperson being grilled over this. Nobody seems to care that the head of a foreign country is admonishing mayors, governors, and federal law enforcement about what they should be doing to quell freedom of speech on college campuses. When's the last time you heard this happen, Ray?
Well, that's chutzpah on steroids. I guess the last time I heard it happen was last time Bibi Netanyahu was given an appearance at the joint session of Congress, despite the wishes of Obama that he not come. So this guy is a real operator. And, you know, it's interesting how the spokesman for the State Department handled this issue.
We'll watch that right now. This is, it's about 2 minutes long, but it's worth watching. It's deeply, deeply frustrating that the American government has such fools as official spokespersons for them. But this is
This is a journalist grilling Mr. Patel, the deputy spokesperson for the State Department, cut number five.
But I'm asking you, there's a foreign leader who's saying that American law enforcement, including the National Guard, ought to crack down on Americans exercising their First Amendment right to free speech. I'm asking you on this particular issue, not on October 7, not on all this that happened. I'm asking you, do you find this to be appalling by a foreign leader in direct interference in the way Americans conduct themselves?
A leader can call on whatever they'd like, Saeed, but it's no one is naive to the fact that utilization of the National Guard is ultimately a decision up to individual governors.
I understand.
And so beyond that, the Prime Minister is welcome to make whatever comments he'd like.
Yes, hold it. Please, everyone... I'm not done. Hey, I'm not done, please. I'm not done. I just want to ask, I understand the need to combat the despicable anti-Semitism and so on. I understand what the president is doing. I'm asking you, do you reject the fact that a foreign leader is saying that the demonstrations ought to be put out, ought to be cracked down upon? That's what I'm asking you. Do you reject that?
Sorry.
I mean, do you reject the U.S. government cracking down on peaceful demonstrators, correct? Correct? You reject that? I mean, this is part of what America is all about. I'm asking you, do you reject the interference of a foreign leader calling for the crackdown on full American citizens exercising their basic rights, their First Amendment rights to demonstrate? That's what I'm asking you.
The Prime Minister was commenting on something happening in this country. I will say, over the course
the Prime
of this,
Minister,
I
I'm asking you. You are here representing the government of the United States of America. I'm asking you, as an officer of this government, of this administration, do you reject the interference of a foreign leader saying that you must crack down on Americans exercising their right to demonstrate? It's a very simple question.
I wouldn't equate that to interfering, Saeed.
Right.
Now, I've taken a couple of questions on this.
I have a couple more questions, but I have one last comment. Don't you feel offended by the fact that a foreign leader is trying to fan the flames against Palestinian Americans in this country? That's exactly what he's doing. You don't feel offended by that?
Saeed, that is not how I would interpret the Prime Minister's comments, and I defer you to his office to offer any clarification on what he said.
God, this is frustration on steroids. Obviously, the United States State Department is terrified of Netanyahu. What he said last week calling for a crackdown on free speech was reprehensible, even if it had been articulated by an American politician, and the State Department is afraid to address this.
Well, Judge, this is symptomatic of the relationship between Israel and the United States. Netanyahu bragged in 2001 that the American support, 80% at the time, was absurd, his word. Now, there were other people that got really frustrated, as we are now. One was General Scowcroft, National Security Advisor to Republican administrations. And when he saw little George Bush start a war largely on behalf of Israel, the Israelis were prodding us to do this war of aggression against Iraq. I have come to the realization that, there were three reasons: oil, Israel, and the logistics for these permanent military bases. But I think Israel was the prime factor. What Scowcroft said when he saw that Sharon, the prime minister at the time, was bending our president, he said, Sharon has President Bush mesmerized. He's wrapped him around his little finger. Now, was Scowcroft usually want to go to the press to say these things? Never, never. Very discreet, okay? Why did he go to the Financial Times to say that? Because he thought Americans should know that. What was his position at the time? Chairman of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. What was his position the next day? No longer chairman. Don't darken our doorstep again. So if Scowcroft can be so upset by the handle that the Israelis had on George W. Bush and on our president now, Biden, okay? Well, we should not feel out of step. We should feel that this is a guy in the know. That's how he felt. That's what he was compelled to say. I don't know what State Department spokesman said in reaction to that. Probably nothing at the time.
Switching gears, what kind of pressure did the intelligence community put on Speaker Mike Johnson in order to get him to change his mind, change his vote, and permit a vote for the $95 billion in foreign aid, 20 to Israel, 61 to Ukraine, and the rest of Taiwan and some other pet causes of the State Department? But let's talk about Ukraine. That's the one that most upset conservative and libertarian Republicans.
Well, there have been many stories in the press sourced to White House sources saying that Mike Johnson was given the kind of briefing by the CIA director, William Burns, that he couldn't possibly refuse to give this extra money. Mike Johnson said, "I was very impressed by the briefing. It turned me around." What did he say otherwise? Well, there's other things here. What was it? Oh, yeah. Johnson ran through what he took from the briefings, according to this one press report. Quote, "I believe Xi and Vladimir Putin and Iran are really at axis of evil. I think they are in coordination on this. I think that Vladimir Putin would continue to march through Europe if he were allowed. I think he might go to the Baltics next. I think that we have a showdown with Poland and with other NATO allies. I think this because Bill Burns told me." Now,
he also said the fate of Western democracy was on his own shoulders.
Yeah. So his big burden, right? Yeah. So, you know, this is consequential. In other words, the intelligence community is not supposed to serve Congress or the president by lying. This happened before. In July of last year, the president was in Helsinki. Okay, this is the way it works. Okay, he wants to make a big speech, a strong speech in Helsinki because Ukraine forces are beginning to win. Okay, so Jake Sullivan calls the head of the CIA, Bill Burns, and "Bill, give me a strong statement of how we're winning in Ukraine." Bill Burns comes up with, Russia is suffering a strategic defeat. Their militaries have been shown to be ineffectual. That goes to Sullivan. He takes his pen and he says, Russia has already lost the war. Biden on the 13th, 6 days later, Russia has already lost the war in Ukraine. So, I mean, here's the head of intelligence giving his boss, really, Jacob Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, what he wants rather than what his analysts are saying. No one thought, not even Obama thought, that Ukraine could possibly cope with a much stronger Russia on its border. And Obama had the wisdom and the foresight to say precisely that. What he also said was the worst error we could possibly make is to give the Ukrainians the idea that they could cope, that they could defeat a Russia, because look at the map, look at geography, look at the industrial base, they couldn't possibly do it. That's why I, Obama, are not going to give them offensive arms. Well, what happened? Did the geography change? Did the Russians change? Who changed? Well, Joe Biden came in, and he's going to get these commies, he's going to get these Russians. He has this visceral hate for Russia. There's another guy who has visceral hate for Russia, and that's this guy, James Clapper, who was made head of national intelligence. Now, the question always comes up, you know, these people really believe what they say? Well, I'm convinced that James Clapper does. And I cite this interview with Chuck Todd because it really reveals how he comes at this. You know, he's an expert in Russia, of course, because he studied in the Curtis LeMay Air Force schools about Russia. That's how old he is. And he said, he told Chuck Todd, if you put the context around everything else we know about the Russians, what they were doing to interfere with the election, and just, quote, and just the historical practices of the Russians, who typically are almost genetically driven to co-opt, penetrate, gain favor, whatever, which is a typical Russian technique. So we're very concerned, end quote. Now, that's the head of all intelligence. So is that the mindset that the Russians are almost genetically inclined to be really bad people? Well, apparently Clapper did believe that, I believe, and he set the tone for the rest of the intelligence analysis, such as it was.
And, you know, this is the culture, and this is the attitude that influences legislation. But before I let you go, what do you think Burns could possibly have shown Speaker Johnson that would cause him to flip? What would it be? Some secret recording of Vladimir Putin, some cables from CIA agents in the field? What would it actually be that they would look at in the one of these secret rooms that they go to in the basement of the Capitol?
Judge, the CIA has the finest graphics shop in the world, okay? They're helped by other agencies, but they come up with whatever is necessary for the occasion, unfortunately. Think of Colin Powell's speech before the UN on 5 February 2003. So what they showed Mike Johnson can be kind of imagined as really sexy photography that brings things down to a matter of inches, intercepted conversations very selectively sought and produced. In other words, this all happened before and no one was held accountable. It happened before the attack on Iraq. It was manufactured intelligence. They knew about it, but they couldn't say anything. Now, Dick Durbin, for example, Senator Durbin from Illinois, okay? He goes into one of these rooms before the Iraq thing, okay? And he comes out and the press says, what do you think? He goes, I don't know. Yeah, well, what would they tell you? I can't tell you because it's classified. There were people who knew damn well, Durbin included, that this was a fool's errand and it was illegal and it was a war of aggression. But they couldn't tell you. Because once they go into that little room, it's classified. They're afraid. They're afraid of consequences to their careers, to their personal lives. They're afraid, the senators and the representatives of our country.
So much for our democracy. Ray, thank you very much, my dear friend. We'll see you at the end of the week for the roundtable with Larry, as usual.
Thank you, Judge.
Great, great conversation. Thank you. The aforementioned Larry Johnson coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Anya Parampil, and at 4:30 this afternoon, the inimitable Scott Ritter. Judge Napolitano for Judging Freedom.